This episode of Kids These Days was originally recorded for broadcast on November 2nd, 2010. You can still comment on this program by visiting kidsthesedays.org.
Kids These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
October just ended, which means National Anti-Bullying Month is now over. But today on Kids These Days, we're still talking about it. There have been a lot of stories in the news recently about cases of bullying all across the nation. Kids can be really mean to each other, and bad things can happen as a result of that. But there are lots of ways people are trying to make a difference and make it stop. We've been wondering about that at Kids These Days, and together we'll learn today about what's going on in our region. We have three guests joining us, one from the Mat-Su School District by phone, and two from the Anchorage District today in the studio. We'll also hear from the author of Simplicity Parenting about how what happens in our homes can play a part in aggressive behavior. And we'll take you to the halls of Chugiak High School, where students themselves are working toward prevention. All that and more on Kids These Days today. It's Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. You are a growing part of Kids These Days and the community that we have here, and we want to hear from you. Call us now at 1-888-KTD-RADIO. That's 888-583-7234 to comment now. Or you can send us a note to mail@kidsthesedays.org, and you can always contact us through our website at kidsthesedays.org. Today, I'm joined by two guests in the studio, and one is coming to us from the Mat-Su Valley by phone. LeBron McPhail is on the phone. He's worked for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District since 1984, and during his 30-plus year career, he's served as a teacher, a coach, assistant principal, principal, and is currently the director of education. And throughout the district now, he oversees the bullying prevention efforts there. Thanks for being with us today, LeBron.
Thank you.
Also with me in the studio is Vicki Blakeney. She is the Anchorage School District Social Emotional Learning Curriculum Coordinator, and she's in her seventh year in that position. And the Anchorage School District is a leader in the field of social emotional learning standards. Thanks for being here today, Vicki.
Sure, thank you.
And last but not least, we have Jan Davis. Jan Davis is a social emotional learning support teacher for all middle schools in the Anchorage School District, and she's also been in that position for 7 years.
Hi.
Thanks for being here to all of you. Let's start, LeBron, with you, and I'd like to know a little bit about what is it that you, in your position, are doing to help prevent bullying and address bullying when it happens in the Mat-Su schools?
Well, one of the things is we have three trainers here in the district. I'm one of two other trainers that we formed an initiative some years ago, I would say maybe about 5 years ago, if not more, in looking at bullying prevention. Me personally, as a principal, I was looking at ways of reducing discipline within my schools that I was covering at that time. So what we have done at this point in time, dealing with our elementary schools, we have implemented, at least at five of our schools, a program called VS Bullying Prevention, where we go out, we train roughly about eight teachers at the school. They in turn turn around and train the rest of the staff. I want to make sure that I don't just say teachers. It's also I've trained bus drivers. Parents are also a part of the training too. We definitely need them there. And what this program basically does is it's a school-wide discipline program. So the language that's said is throughout. So whether you be kindergarten up to fifth grade, all of that is the same. And a survey comes with that.
And so when you say you're out there training teachers and other people, other adults who are working within the schools, you know, what does that training consist of? Are they looking for particular behaviors or learning how to respond in particular ways?
Exactly. A couple of things. First of all, we train them to look at what bullying is, you know, exactly what is bullying? And usually that's an imbalance. It's something that's repeated on a regular basis. It's they're not friends of one another. So you know the difference between, i.e., rough play versus a fight, you know, when it comes to that. So you're learning about that. Where are the problems happening at within the school? Normally those places are possibly, it could be in the hallway, it could be at recess, classroom. It could be many different places. So you look at that. You look at the intervention that you would do, what we would call on-the-spot intervention.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking to identify bullying versus rough play or when friends maybe get upset. And you're looking at where bullying happens and then how to intervene, it sounds like. Are those kind of the basic points?
Exactly. And there's, you know, exclusion. There's the pushing, the teasing, the name calling. There's many different ways of looking at bullying.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jan Davis, in your position working with middle schools in the Anchorage School District, that question of defining bullying, what is bullying, what's your answer to that in terms of what the district perspective is?
Well, what we do at the middle schools, it's mandated by our board that all seventh graders get the 12 lessons in aggressors, victims, and bystanders. In our schools that are 6th, 7th, and 8th, the 6th graders, through their language art and other supplemental lessons, get introductions to AVB, and then our 8th graders get supplemental lessons after AVB to continue the discussion. So it's not just discussed during 12 lessons. It's something that we discuss all year. And I like what LeBron had said. It's also a change in climate. How people deal with bullying has a lot to do with how they were treated and what role they played as an aggressor, a bystander, or a victim in their childhood or even in their adulthood. So what we try to do is to explain what bullying is, what it may look like, the difference between the horsing around and the imbalance that you may see with bullying, and to know what it is when we see it and then how to address it so our kids know it's not acceptable at our schools. And what the national and international studies are showing is that having the power with the bystanders, and what AVB calls them, is the problem-solving bystanders to say, we don't do that here. And what it is showing, is this research shows, is that within 10 seconds, the bullying stops. And a lot of times what we realize with bullying and what we see is they get their power from the same light peers that are around them. And so if it's acceptable by them, they're going to continue to do it, and then it becomes a habit. And so we're looking through aggressors, victims, and bystanders not only at bullying, but the habit of violence, the thoughts, processes that kids and adults may have, and how we can change that so we're all working together and treating each other with respect.
So aggressors, victims, and bystanders. That is, it's a program or a curriculum or
yes,
both?
Yes, it's a program and a curriculum, and then we have, through our work and the work that I've done with parents and teachers and administrators, have developed that. In fact, that Dr. Slavey, who wrote the curriculum, they use our middle link as our website as a training tool for the nation.
Really?
Yes.
So this is a national effort.
Yes.
And there's something that's been developed here locally in the Anchorage School District that's used in a national way.
Yes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. We've done a lot of work.
So, and the idea here is that since in sixth grade, kids are learning about these three different participants.
Yes.
And one is the aggressor, or, you know, some are the aggressors, some are the bystanders, some are the victims.
Yes. And what we know from the studies is that 80 to 90% of the time we are bystanders, and that we do play all three roles throughout our life, but a lot of times we're mainly the bystanders, and how we react as a bystander, if we ignore it or we walk away or we try to help and we intervene as adults and kids, can help us throughout our whole life. And to stop the acceptance of bullying. And, you know, so many times, I'm sure as all of us have heard, oh, boys will be boys. That's what girls do. They'll grow out of it. And what we know from the studies, kids don't grow out of it. It affects us lifetime.
And so why is aggressors, victims, and bystanders something that's happening in middle schools? Is that a nationwide thing too?
It's a middle school program.
Okay.
And when we went out 7-8 years ago and was trained in and looking for a program, it was what we felt was best for middle schools, and the Department of Education also deems it as a promising program. And so that's what we thought at the time was the best for our school and what our needs were. And then we have developed it over the last 8 years to better meet our needs. For example, we've added cyberbullying stuff into the program, mm-hmm. and what's going on here in Anchorage and what we need to help our kids.
Well, Victoria Blankney, you work in the Anchorage School District with social emotional learning and what it is that you're doing with elementary schools.
Our elementary schools have, similar to how the middle schools have aggressors, victims, and bystanders, our elementary schools have adopted bullying prevention and school-wide discipline approaches as well. Probably the most common curriculum in the elementary school is our connected and respected curriculum, which is delivered in a very similar way. The teachers have a set lesson, a set number of curricular lessons that they deliver to the students that teach the kids, right behaviors around bullying and bullying issues. We mm-hmm. also have, in the elementary schools, a specific bullying prevention curriculum called Sunburst Bullying. And we have, for my role, a much bigger perspective on it in social-emotional learning, because we're also teaching the general population things like controlling your emotions, understanding your emotions, empathy, understanding other people's emotions, resolving conflicts in a positive way, understanding your own personal traits. So all of those things that can build into preventing bullying and imbalances of power before they even begin.
Well, I'd like to remind listeners that this is Kids These Days, and today we're talking about bullying and bullying prevention efforts in South Central, in the Mat-Su School District, as well as the Anchorage School District. And first, we have a piece that Jessica Cochran, our regular contributor, provided for us today. School districts, principals, and security officers deal with bullying and other discipline issues on a daily basis. But at one area high school, students help resolve those kinds of issues themselves. Chugiak High School is the only high school in the Anchorage School District with a peer mediation program. And as KTD contributor Jessica Cochran reports, most disputes come down to miscommunication.
Leading up to the bell at the end of lunch, the halls at Chugiak High School are busy, with students hurrying or being herded to get to class on time. Not everyone is rushing back from lunch. Some days, a handful of students spend their break in a peer mediation. Three student mediators work with students involved in a dispute, trying to help the students come up with a solution. Students might be referred by a security person or the discipline principal, or they might come forward on their own, needing help to settle an issue. Jeremy Sobosinski is a senior now. He's been a mediator since freshman year.
What we do is we try to lead the disputants so that they can figure out their own problem for themselves, and then so they can figure out how they need to personally live with each other. We can't tell people what to do, and we can't tell people how to live, but we let them figure out how they're going to live with each other, and in the future, if a situation comes up, how they'll react to it.
It doesn't always work out that way. Mediations are about 50 minutes long, and if the students don't want to be there, it's not enough time to bring people to consensus.
And if all else fails, as Ms. Marshall said, you can do this, you have to do this, you can't get in fights, that kind of thing, and you ask them, can you live with that? Could you do that? And you get their agreement.
Senior Rachel Four says most of the cases are about some form of miscommunication.
A friend tells a student that someone else said something about them, or...
If you are a member and belong to the Wednesday Lunch Club, we'll be meeting in the House One Lounge. Thank you.
Or rumors spread about a student doing something that they did or didn't do, and then the student retaliates against the student that they thought did something or said something without confirmation from the other student.
And in those kinds of cases, the opportunity to talk things out can make a big difference. Hopefully the participants can handle things differently the next time a problem comes up.
Solutions that we've come up with is actually in a peaceful manner coming up to the student that they thought they had issues with and discussing what actually happened in the situation rather than going through a third party to find out information.
Chugiak's peer mediators apply to the program and are screened to make sure they're dedicated. They go through an annual training about the mediation process and additional training throughout the year on various issues, conflict resolution, bullying.
Oftentimes, if you can prevent misunderstandings, you can prevent bullying as a result of the misunderstanding. And if it comes down to it, the contract also, often would just entail ending the bullying. And so I think overall it helps with that.
With bullying, people often do it because they think it's cool behavior or behavior that will get attention drawn to them in a positive way. Whereas when they come into a mediation, the mediators will tell them that's not what everyone thinks. Like, they get another perspective on the situation and they understand that, oh, this behavior is actually not okay.
Chugiak's discipline principal, Colette Marshall, says in her 6 years at Chugiak, the types of issues have stayed the same, but now they can escalate more quickly thanks to all those digital devices kids have access to.
They can say things unedited in Facebook, in MySpace, via the text, via the computer, via the cell phones, that they would not say face-to-face. If you and I were sitting down and we had an issue, the exchange that we would have verbally would be much, much different than the exchange we would have via whether it's a cell phone or a computer. I mean, the things that are said in that media it's horrible.
Marshall has been trying to figure out a better way to communicate the harassment policy from the student handbook. She uses a PowerPoint presentation and wants to add video for next year. She says student mediators go over that policy first thing in any mediation involving harassment. Faculty coordinator Stephanie Alexander says students may not always notice the difference in kids' behaviors, but teachers do.
Every year I'm pulled aside by that teacher and confidentially told, hey, those two couldn't stand each other, and now, 6 weeks later, they requested to work in a group and on a collaborative project, and they're not best friends, but they can coexist. So, you know, we're not asking them to be best friends. We're just asking them to be able to come to school, set personal differences aside, and be able to come to school for why we're coming to school, and that is to learn.
More information is available on the Chugiak Peer Mediators website. You can link to it from our website, kidsthesedays.org. I'm Jessica Cochran.
LeBron McPhail, that was a story that was about a particular program that was in the Anchorage School District in a high school. And I'm wondering, in the Matanuska-Susitna School District, can you tell us a little bit about the efforts that go on within high schools there to prevent bullying?
Well, we also have peer mediation here in the Valley, too, at several of our schools. And the same thing that was mentioned on that piece there are the same things that are happening within our school. They are meeting, whether it's at lunchtime or what they call advisory times, with students that may have conflicts with one another there too. I am meeting with our student advisory groups, at least I have met with them, to talk about bullying prevention and ways of instilling that or integrating that within the school so they have other tools to use within their school for kids that may be having difficulty getting along with one another.
Victoria Blakeney, you are the social emotional learning curriculum coordinator, and since in the Anchorage School District so many anti-bullying efforts are linked to social emotional learning, how come there's only one peer mediation program, at least in high schools, right now in the district? Is it something that is, you know, coming up, or something that's maybe phasing out?
Very good question. There are peer mediators in 20 or more of our elementary schools. So we have the mediation program in our elementary schools. But we don't have it in the high schools. We do have leadership programs in the high schools where kids are taught to combat various issues as leaders, and then they go in and use those issues or those skills and lead their peers. So there's peer leadership efforts, but there's not necessarily peer mediator efforts.
And so we're talking together a lot about programs, and there's curriculum, and there's, you know, the Anchorage School District, and it sounds like the Anchorage School District is using one that's a national promising yes. program. LeBron McPhail, I think you mentioned to me off the air that the program that you're using in MATSU is one that comes from an international source, correct?
Right. It's one of the top 10 in the blueprint book, and it was OBS.
Okay. So then why is it that there is a need for such a structured way of going about this now? Because I might be mistaken, but I don't remember there being this kind of thing happening when I was in school. And I'm sure that my dad would tell me that there's no way this kind of stuff was happening when he was in school.
Well, I think for a lot of things is it's in the spotlight. It's a buzzword for the last 5-6 years. And we see things that we're looking for. And if the kids don't feel and adults don't feel that a place is safe, then the school is safe and the climate is something that they can express their issues with people who are going to help them. They don't talk about it. When we first started the AVB program, that and after we start the program with the kids, the reporting of harassment and bullying skyrockets. But the kids need to know we're going to listen and we're going to do something about it. And the board knows it's going to happen. The administrators know it's going to happen. And then after a while, our suspension rates, our referral rates have, you know, dropped drastically because of that. But the kids know they need to know it's a safe place and they're going to be heard and something's going to happen and something is going to, they know they're going to be safe. Also, what I would like to say at the middle school, what we do is we have other programs with the AVB program that we have that are homegrown because we don't want it to be just 12 lessons and then we don't talk about it again. But at every middle school, we have a prevention and intervention coordinator that works one-on-one with kiddos who may need help with their social emotional skills. Just like if kids are low in math skills, we give them math support, or reading skills, we give them reading support. So our kiddos who are low in social emotional skills, anger management, making friends, whatever it may be, we have a prevention and intervention coordinator that I work closely with at all the schools to work one-on-one with these kiddos. And also to, if it's at the beginning of stages of kids not getting along, to do mediations also with the kiddos that may be having problems. And then we also, one of our biggest things we've done in the last year and a half is with our in-school suspension program, instead of it being a punitive, you're in there, you're doing your homework, you're not talking, at all of our middle schools, the first part of the day, if not longer, is dedicated to social emotional learning skills. And so the kids are relearning, because we all don't understand and learn things the first time it's told to us. And we all may come from homes that it's acceptable to do some different things, and we need to learn other ways of handling it. And if you think about it, if the kids have a toolbox and they only have two things in their tools in their toolbox to deal with conflict, and one is hitting and the second one is to hit harder, they're going to be in trouble. So we need to give them all these other options to do during conflict so that they aren't ending up hitting at the end. Mm-hmm. So they have other roles.
And if I can just interject there, too, one of the other things I believe that happens, i.e. with these programs here, is that you end up with a healthy school climate where students, or i.e. speaking with respect to one another, and the ability to learn. You're not having someone look over your back or anything like that, so it doesn't hamper the students' learning, and the kids are feeling a little bit more secure in what they, you know, in what they're doing, and that the adults that are there can intervene, and they feel comfortable about the adults that are now intervening, because maybe before, the adults maybe did not have the tools available to them. So I think that's also an important part to mention.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And that's Jan Davis and LeBron McPhail. And this is Vicki Blakeney.
Before we get too much further away from this part of the conversation, I wanted to go back to peer mediators just for a quick second so that people listening don't think, oh, good, if we adopt peer mediation, we've solved our problem. Because one of the things that we know about bullying is that it can't be mediated peer-to-peer. So you can use it as a prevention when conflicts are going to explode, or you know, maybe to stop it before it becomes bullying. But as LeBron was mentioning earlier, the issue with bullying is that it's an imbalance of power. So the weaker, for lack of a better term,
the victim,
the student that is being bullied, can't come to a win-win in an imbalance of power like that. They need somebody stronger to step up, or for the
and a peer mediator won't be right in that role,
right? Yes. So it's kind of dangerous to put the two in the room and ask them to mediate their conflicts, because all that will happen is that the victim will feel unheard again and blamed again and told that they had a part that they could have played if they would have done a better job or something, and they don't. That's not what bullying is about. So
So definitely, I think mediation has its part, and it plays an important role at the beginning stages of a conflict. But if it's true bullying, mediation does not work, is what we're trying to say.
This is LeBron speaking. One of the things that I would say here is also informing the stakeholders, which are the students that are there, that, again, this type of behavior is not acceptable. And one of the things that I always say is when the bully, the person that's doing the bullying, is not there, maybe they're absent from school, the kids, they all seem to get along together. So when you can educate everyone involved to help them change the norm, then everyone's able to get along.
Mm-hmm. It's that peer power that's so powerful, and that bystander that the kids need to claim what kind of school they want, and the adults, and what kind of climate they demand at their school. And we have seen a change in that. And the kids are the main role in that.
And that's Jan Davis of the Anchorage School District. The internet has brought a new dimension to bullying, cyberbullying. The Anchorage Police Department has a cyber crimes unit, and recently it brought Susan Harnish on as a cyber crimes prevention specialist. Susan is also a member of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force and sat down with me in the studio this week to talk about her outreach work. Well, Susan, tell me a little bit about your cyberbullying training. Are you doing this with young people or with caretakers or a combination?
A combination. I try to get kids at least fourth or fifth grade on up.
So what do you do in those kinds of trainings? What are you telling kids about cyberbullying?
With the younger kids, what I do is I ask them to tell me what it means, for them to explain to me what cyberbullying means. And then I will go through and tell them what it really is. And most part, they are pretty good at what they're telling me is it's pretty close to what I have found in my research.
So what really is cyberbullying?
Basically, it's taking your playground tactics and putting them out on the internet. It's to embarrass, it's tease, threaten, harass, basically tell lies, post altered pictures, start rumors that aren't true. That's basically what it is, just trashing another person's reputation, basically.
So why is cyberbullying a different beast than bullying in, you know, in person, face-to-face?
Because it's anonymous. You don't see the other person on the other side of the screen, so kids are more likely to put out mean information or mean things or say them because it is anonymous. They don't think that there's another person on the other side, or they can't relate to there being another person that receives that message.
And so do you think since the tools are there, the technological tools are there for cyberbullying, are kids these days encountering this? Is cyberbullying like totally different from what kids without the internet experienced when they got bullied?
I think so because, for one, when I was younger, if I got bullied on the playground, I could go home to mom and dad and they could kiss it and make it better and give me a cookie or whatever. And you got away from it. And the next day you'd go back to school and you'd start over. But most of the time, you know, sometimes you wouldn't, sometimes you would. It just depends. But with internet, because kids have constant access to internet, it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can't get away from it like I did when I was younger.
And so when you ask the kids when you do these trainings about what cyberbullying is, and you said for the most part they tell you exactly what it is, are our kids, our Alaska kids, suffering from cyberbullying, in your opinion?
Yes, definitely. I don't think a lot of them are reporting it, but I've been in contact with several schools in Anchorage and in Mat-Su, and they definitely want me to come out and talk about cyberbullying to the kids. And I've also been in contact with a person in Homer that her child is being cyberbullied. And it's becoming a problem within the schools. Not only, you'd think it'd be more in high school, but it's actually getting down into the middle schools and the upper elementary, where it's fifth, sixth, seventh, somewhere in there. And so it is becoming a problem.
So what can caretakers do? Parents, teachers, other adults who are concerned and want to help?
My first response is don't respond to the email. Don't ignore it if they get an email or a text. Don't respond to it. The more you respond, the worse it gets. It kind of gets into a snowball effect where it just keeps going and going. Don't ignore it, but don't respond to it. And don't pass it on, because if you start passing it on, then you become the bully and part of the problem and not the solution. What you also want to do is to save the evidence. If it's in an email, it's quite possible that we can take the information off there and backtrack it to who originated it. May not always be the case, but there's a good possibility that we can do that. And most of all, you want to report it to parents or to school or to police or some trusted adult if you're a child. And once they start finding out that they're reporting this, then it maybe we'll be able to stop it.
And so you're suggesting that the caretakers of kids who, you know, just get, say, cyberbullied for the first time should be reporting it to the police?
I don't think the first time, but if it continues on and on, then yeah, they really do need to file a report. A lot of times, too, the schools will be able to, if it happens off a campus, you know, I don't think the first time, but if it continues on, then yeah, they really do need to file a report. A lot of times, too, the schools will be able to, if it happens off a campus, the schools may be able to step in if it affects how the kids are behaving on campus. So what I'm really trying to say is that if I get cyberbullied and my grades start to fall or I don't want to go to school, it's quite possible the schools can step in and help out or do something. And a lot of the high schools, or most all of them in Anchorage, have school resource officers. So the kids can go to them and show them what's going on.
And a school resource officer is a police...
Is a police officer okay. Within the schools, yes.
Okay. That was Susan Harnish, and she compiled a bunch of online resources for parents and caretakers and kids themselves about cyberbullying and online safety. And we'll link to those from kidsthesedays.org. Well, I'm Shanna Sheehy, and this is Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. And today I'm in the studio with two guests from the Anchorage School District and one from the MATSU who's joining us by the phone. And we're talking about what bullying looks like in our South Central community and the ways our school districts are working to prevent that. After the break, we'll hear from our producer, Sarah Gonzalez, as she talks about bullying with the author of the new book, Simplicity Parenting. And we'll go to Kodiak as part of Kids These Days' Power of One series. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a minute. On Kids These Days, we're coming back after a break to share our favorite stories with you. It's the holiday season, and this time of year is filled with traditions, rituals, spirit, and memories. All of those pieces come together for each of us when we celebrate in our own ways with friends and family. We'll fill the hour with information, education, and fun pieces that you clicked on the most at kidsthesedays.org, plus the Power of One and Chef KTD. Join us next time. Thanks for being with us here on Kids These Days today. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Your voice is important to us, so let us know what you're thinking. Email us at mail@kidsthesedays.org or call us toll-free. That number is 1-888-583-7234 or KTD Radio. Join me and my guests, Jan Davis, Vicky Blakeney, and LeBron McPhail, and let us know what's up and join this conversation about bullying. But first, for a child who is being bullied or is doing the bullying, the home environment can play an important role in either perpetrating or in preventing social difficulties for kids. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez recently spoke with Simplicity Parenting author Kim John Payne. Payne develops anti-bullying approaches with schools and spoke with Sarah about what families can do at home to help their children cope with and avoid bullying.
Hi, Kim. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Sarah.
So I'd like to talk to you about the issue of bullying that we're looking at on the show today, but more specifically, I wanted to focus our conversation on bullying at home. Do you think that bullying begins in the home?
Yeah, one of the things that happens in the home is that it's where the kind of rubber hits the road of a lot of what's going on in terms of a very fast-paced, too much, too soon, too quick type of lifestyle. One of the things that parents can do in the home to be most effective with helping their children involved in social difficulties is to take a real hard look at scheduling, at overdoing it, at doing too much too soon. Because my experience for years now working as a counselor, helping parents whose kids are getting bullied or who are bullying, is the place to begin actually is not with the bullying itself, but looking at this sort of overwhelm that many of our kids face, because that very often brings out really not the best in our kids. And when we calm their lives down, when we simplify their lives, I can't tell you how many parents have rediscovered really healthy, popular, social kids.
What do you think is people who bully children or adults, what are they trying to accomplish?
I think there's a range of issues. One of the key issues in terms of home life is that my work has been for many years working with stressed and traumatized kids. I've worked in development sites everywhere from Cambodia, the Thai Cambodian refugee camps, to Southern Africa, to the townships in Soweto. I've worked in all kinds of sites around the world, and what one of the things you see with very, very stressed kids is that when I look into the eyes of a child in Cambodia who's very stressed because of war, and I look into the eyes of a child who's being picked on at school, I see the same look. I see the same sort of stress and trauma, and that's disturbing to think that these kind of kids are living their life in, for them, what is a war zone. One of the correlations here between the very, very stressed kids I've seen in war zones around the world and kids I see in schoolyards and our corridors and locker rooms and that kind of behavior that's perpetrated there in a bullying sense is that they are seeking to gain control. And their world is a little bit out of control. They're living life at a fever pitch. Too much is coming at them. But one of the things we can do at home is simplify the child's life. You know, the thing that I've noticed over the years, that the kids who get picked on are the reactive kids. They're the kids who when something is said to, they'll react and they draw attention to themselves. But there's a strong correlation between the reactive kids and the kids whose lives have gotten out of control and that are too fast and too overheated. So the simple answer, and I know this sounds overly simple, but it is incredibly impactful, is to cool the kids' lives down.
What do you recommend that parents or caregivers, families do to provide that calm setting at home?
Well, one of the first things is to look at the environment and just look at the avalanche of toys and books and clothes, and just there's too much stuff. Our life is just full of just stuff, and just to give our kids a bedroom at the very least that's calm, just clean it up, clean it out. Another is to, and this is a very, very healing thing for kids who are involved both in bullying and in terms of being targeted, or if they're picking on others, both here, is to introduce much stronger rhythms and predictability. Most of these kids are nervous and they're anxious. And the key, one of the strong keys to helping kids who are nervous and anxious, is to give them a rhythmical, predictable life so that bedtimes happen at a certain time, that meal times happen at a certain time. The third one is to be very, very careful about overscheduling your kids. If your kids are getting involved in social controversy in the neighborhood or at school, then as well as simplifying their bedrooms and their environments, as well as making life more predictable, you really want to start thinking about how you can pull back on some of the scheduling. Give them a balance between downtime and active time. That's a huge one. And I've left the hard one till last, and that's be very, very careful about how much media, how much screen, particularly screens, TVs, computers, phones, and to have a real hard think about the digital overload. I think of this as like a sensory tsunami that is coming at our kids.
I have to ask you, you know, I can think of at least three movies off the top of my head where a child comes home from school, says to their parents, I'm having problems, this kid keeps picking on me and is, you know, stealing my lunch money, pushing me. And the parent, generally in these cases, in these films, it's the dad that says, well, you have to stand up for yourself and you have to punch back.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is that the right advice to give children, or how in your opinion should parents handle those situations at home?
Look, when a child comes home and says they're picked on and they're upset, one of the things that is the number one worst thing to do is to actually be triggered and have your own reactions and start taking over the problem from the child and calling other parents and pounding on the administrator's desk, because that is deeply embarrassing to kids. So our reaction, I really appreciate the question, because our reaction is crucial. We live in a society now where if a child turns around and hits another kid, or even verbally abuses another child, which is just as bad in some ways, they'll be hauled up into the principal's office so quickly that what happens is that the bullies now have gotten their way. They've got your son or daughter into trouble, and you've been a part of getting them into trouble because they've reacted. So the answer, therefore, is how can you help your child be, in a certain sense, non-reactive?
So what are some of those specific tips that you suggest for that?
Well, specifically, kids inevitably think they're being teased because they're different. And it's actually, for the most part, not accurate. They're being picked on because they react. And that's why. Get together with the child and work out almost like a mantra so that you can give your children something to say, and you practice it and you role play it with them. And it seems weird at first, but after a week or two of practicing this with them, two things happen. One is that you get closer to them. And then when they put it into practice, the bullies become buddies. Usually within about 7 to 10 days, the kids stop and the child starts getting respect. Other kids stop backing off, because a lot of kids back away from a child who's being victimized. Kids start moving in, and usually 2 to 3 weeks, the whole situation is turned around. And I know that sounds like, oh, come on, can that really happen that quickly? And in about 7 out of 10 situations, that's exactly what happened.
Well, Kim John Payne, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with Kids These Days. And we will link to your website and your book from our website at kidstheseDays.org. Thank you for your time.
Oh, it's been a delight to talk to you.
Vicki Blakeney from the Anchorage School District, let me kind of throw this to you, since you, as an educator, work with social-emotional learning. How do you react to some of the ideas that Kim John Payne just put forward?
I liked how he ended it, and I appreciated hearing the to learn to control your manage your emotions, etc., and that we need to teach that at home, because obviously we can't ask kids to have control of their emotions while yelling at them to get that control or yelling at somebody else to get that control. So I really liked the modeling piece. I did take a bit of issue with these kids not having Sometimes they do feel powerless, and so to have your parent not stand up with you, who else is going to fight for them in a loving, comforting, careful way? So
you're responding to the idea that, you know, counseling your child, if your child's getting bullied and you counsel your child not to stand up for themselves, then you're also not standing up for your child. Is that what you're saying?
And I think that there is room for contacting the school teacher, contacting the other parents, contacting the administrators and saying...
And doing so in a way that's not embarrassing.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think... This is Jan Davis. I'm sorry. We don't know, if we don't know about it at school, if we're not told about it, we can't help. We can't change things. And a lot of kids who are really masterful bullies aren't doing the harassment in front of us. And so there are so many ways of letting a trusted adult at the building to know, so one, even your child doesn't know that you told us, or nobody else will know. And parents need to have that trust in the schools that we're all working together, but if we don't know, we can't help. And so many times things have escalated to the point that maybe we could have helped at a level before has gotten so hurtful if we had only known.
LeBron McPhail on the phone from Mat-Su. Do you have any reaction to
I would definitely agree with what they've just said there. One of the things that resonated with me was when he talked about the media devices and so forth. Most of the time we like for our kids to pick up a book and read them, but a lot of times you see kids playing, i.e. media devices that are, you know, depicting violence, shooting or what have you, and I won't call the games names, but I think most people know those games and things of that nature. The other piece is sometimes those students that are doing the bullying, we find that they have they're engaged in some antisocial behaviors where they are doing other things that are not appropriate, i.e. whether they're breaking school rules or just breaking rules in general, they're doing other things that they need not do. So those are just some of the things that I kind of, you know, see in those the students that may be victimizing other students.
And Kim John Payne gave some advice for how parents can help in the home from his perspective of this idea of simplicity parenting. What about from your perspective in your jobs as educators in our local districts? How do you think parents can, how can they help in the home? Not so much what Jan Davis just mentioned about coming to the school and saying, hey, there's an issue, let's make it confidential, how can you help my kid? So much as, you know, how can those family dynamics be such that they encourage that respect and they encourage those morals that keep a kid from treating somebody poorly?
I believe a lot of it is role modeling and talking to our kids, having that sit-down dinner. I know both of my kids are very busy in sports, and we don't always get to sit down, but when we are in the car, that's our dinner time conversation, and we use that time to discuss and to get to know each other and to ask what's going on. And it goes back to asking our kids what's happening and being there, listening to them actively and not just saying it. And I think what LeBron also said is put down the videos. And we have a lot of parents who play those games with their kids, and that's how they interact with each other and they bond. And we have to really think about what we want to teach our kids. And that saying, do as I say, not as I do, really resonates with kiddos.
Do any of you find that some of the kids who are themselves bullies are bullied in the home by their family members?
Definitely.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Can you quantify that at all? Like, do you think most kids, half kids, some kids? I mean, I know this is unscientific, but just sort of a feeling.
That's certainly, bullies are entitled in their world to be bullies. And I think they pick up that entitlement from someplace. So I would say a good portion of them are picking it up from home. And
I also think it goes back to what was mentioned earlier also is kiddos who sometimes their behavior tells us a lot of things. And one thing that behavior tells us is that kids are in need of control. And if you don't feel like you have that control at home or in other social situations outside of school because you're being bullied, you're going to learn real quick to take that control because we need that as our human brain needs that control. And kiddos are going to hurt you before they get hurt. And it's that major control, I think, that a lot of our kids who are bullying, they don't know any different. And that's why we hear some teachers say, this is the parents. Parents need to teach their kids to respect each other. And if it's not happening at home, we have to deal with it at school, or we're not going to get, our kids aren't getting anywhere educationally and academically or social and emotionally. So it is part of our job of the kids that come to us, if that's what they need, we need to give it to them.
Mm-hmm. We're also not doing our bullies any favor if we say that our job is to produce children who have a chance at high success in post-secondary life. The statistics show that, you know, as Jen was mentioning earlier, the bullies are going to maintain that bullying entitlement attitude into their adulthood. When you bully in your adulthood, it might have much stronger consequences.
Well, I think we have time for one last subject. Some of the media that we saw a lot of last month with respect to bullying had to do with kids who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, part of the LGBT community. There's been some high profile examples of bullying that resulted in suicides in some of those young people. I wanted to know about our region and whether or not there's any particular emphasis on bullying of those kids who fit into that community in our districts.
At this point in time, I'm not seeing anything that's coming my way in regards to any form of relationships in regards to that. I'm just not seeing it. I'm not saying that it's not out there, but I'm not seeing it at this time.
Mm-hmm. Vicki Blakeney?
Jan might be able to correct me, but my understanding is that we are certainly aware of it and want to do what we can to prevent it, but we don't use a special different type of bullying prevention than we would from any other type of bullying prevention. We are raising awareness, and we want to make sure that those kids are protected just like everybody else, and we understand that that there's a whole realm of issue that go around that, so we continue to talk about that and try to bring that, but we haven't, for example, adopted a specific curriculum in that particular range, because bullying is bullying as well, and so we're trying to prevent bullying from all levels.
Right. And this is Lee Brown. I think bullying in any form, no matter who the person is or what, is wrong. So whether it's name-calling, whether it's teasing, it's exclusion, yes, we don't have a curriculum, you know, for anything like that. We want to bring out what bullying is and what we will do to provide support for it.
Well, I'd like to thank each of you for what you do in your districts in this area, and also for being here on Kids These Days today to talk about this issue. LeBron McPhail joined us by phone from the MATSU. He works there in the MATSU school district with bullying prevention efforts. Thanks so much for being with us today, LeBron.
Thank you.
And in the studio, we have Jan Davis and Victoria Vicki Blakeney, who are both from the Anchorage School District and work in middle schools in Jan's case and K through 12 in the case of Vicki. Thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the ways to combat bullying is to create an environment where kindness, compassion, support, and respect for others can flourish. In this profile, the next in a series we call The Power of One, KTD contributor Jessica Cochran traveled to Kodiak. There she met Mr. D, or Mike DeKiwa, who heads the all-ages youth music sensation, the Kodiak Island Drummers.
On a sunny Kodiak day, the Kodiak Island Drummers are set up outside the town's convention center. And sitting on the sidelines isn't really an option. By the end of the performance, half the audience is playing too. The drummers perform regularly for cruise ship passengers, local special events, passers-by. Mike DeKiwa moved to Kodiak from San Francisco about 15 years ago, thinking drumming was in his past. But when he was asked to play in church, he got back into it. Someone heard him and asked him to start teaching kids at recess. Then the summer program started up.
The kids always, they spend all day in this classroom all year long. So I said, you know what, let's go to the baseball field and we play. So we just started playing there 10 years ago. And Carnes used to pull over to watch us. And that's how we started. We got picked up by the Kodiak Arts Council, and that's how it started.
His program is funded by the Kodiak Island School District and the Arts Council. The drummers play a mixture of different drums and music styles, something for everyone.
I think my favorite song would have to be Jumbe Jam, even though I play the tabanos, because Jumbe Jam is fun, it's active, and it's just really fun, drumming with Mr. D and everything.
My favorite song would be Ashiko, because it was like the first song I learned.
The kids say Mr. D keeps things fun. He jokes that he's the most immature member of the group. There's a lot of joking around, but never to the point of being disrespectful.
I mean, we joke with each other, but you know, there's a certain line that you don't cross where you hurt somebody's feelings or offend anybody, so.
Respect is key to Mr. D. In a group that spans ethnicities, religions, and ages, he's never had problems with kids not getting along. And he laughed when I asked if he'd ever had to ask someone to leave the group. Annette Katina's daughter has been drumming with Kid for about a year.
He's really good with the kids, and the kids really like him, and they listen, and they respect him. So I really like him.
Mr. D does residencies at schools around the state. He brings some of his Kodiak members with him to help teach other kids. Tom Kwas, executive director of the Arts Council, says drumming is a good way for kids to build confidence quickly.
You can take somebody basically right off the streets and get them drumming and get them into a point where they can feel successful about themselves in a very short period of time.
And that's made a difference for some kids.
When he first started the program, that's what he sought, was those kids that had that were on the edge, that were on the fringe. And so since then, there's been a lot of ones that you've met recently that came back, and a lot of those kids are ones that were like, they were on the fringe, they were starting to get in trouble, starting to do things, you know, that, you know, society didn't particularly care for. So I would say those are the ones, you know, that some of those ones that continue to come back and help him out because they're just trying to get back because they got a lot out of it.
Tyler Terrell is a college student and former drummer back playing with the group for the summer.
It gave me a lot of discipline and like I guess confidence also too, because you gotta perform in front of hundreds of people and you're on the spotlight, so yeah.
Mike DeKiwa just wants drumming to help give kids choices.
If it leads to something else, if it leads to any other art, if the discipline leads to the discipline, whether when they go to college, they've learned something. If I planted one of those seeds.
Then that's enough for Mr. D. I'm Jessica Cochran.
That wraps up another Kids These Days. Thanks so much for being with us today. Keep this conversation going even after I sign off. KidsTheseDays.org is a place where you can gather any time of day or night and listen again, participate in the forums we host there, send us a great idea for an upcoming program, you name it. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter too. Congratulations to our newest KTD tote bag winners. If you want to know more about that, connect with us through social media and you'll be in the know from here on out. Today, Jessica Cochran reported from Chugiak and Kodiak both. Sarah Gonzalez produced the show and is our KTD web diva. Mind Over Matthew composed, performed, and produced our original theme music. We'll be back next week, and we're talking about the family vacation. You don't want to miss it or miss out. I'm Shanna Sheehy. See you next time.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the hosts, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on the program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA 91.1 FM Anchorage, KRUA and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.
The episode of Kids These Days that you've just heard was recorded for broadcast on November 2nd, 2010. Kids These Days is back next week to bring you an assortment of your favorite KTD stories to date. So join us next time, and happy Thanksgiving, everyone.